It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Summer is here. That's hard to miss on a day like today. And hopefully over the next few weeks or months, you'll have an opportunity to curl up with a good book or two. This hour, we've got recommendations for your summer reading list from some of our favorite readers. Jan Weissmiller is here of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Hello, Jan.
Hello, Charity.
Paul Ingram, formerly now of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. He is retired from Prairie Lights, although still doing Paul's book club at Prairie Lights.
Oh, yeah, I still do the book club.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you here, Paul.
Oh, it's great.
How's retirement going so far?
Well, I'm not reading the hot new books. I'm rereading the best books of my life because I'm 70 now, and I won't have either my life or my eyesight for huge amounts of period, you know, time. And
all right, so you brought in.
It was the best choice I ever made.
Good.
Because these are really good books.
All right, so we are going to get new books from Jan and new books from our other guest, who's a new guest on Talk of Iowa today. And Paul, you're going to bring us some of your very favorites of all time.
Yeah.
All right, perfect. And Kathy Magruder is here. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, Kathy Magruder of Turner's Books in Indianola. This is going to be a lot of fun this hour. And I think let's start out with fiction first. And because Paul is bringing the classics, I'm going to start with Jan, then we'll go to Kathy, and then Paul can back clean up. But Jan, why don't you start us off?
Well, I have Elizabeth Strout's new book here on the top of my pile, and it's called Anything Is Possible. She is the author of Olive Kittredge is probably her most famous book, and her book before this was called Lucy Barton. And Lucy Barton is just a novella, and Lucy Barton takes place in rural Illinois, sort of rural central Illinois. Well, it takes place in a hospital in New York City, where a woman who grew up in rural central Illinois is being visited by her mother, and they're discussing her childhood.
All right, so a lot of flashbacks.
But this book, the new book, is. Continues with Lucy Barton is sort of the spirit informing this book because she has written a memoir, and it's out in the bookstore in this town of Carlisle, Illinois, and all the characters are getting it, and she's not there, but it's making them recall aspects of their past, and so the stories are just linked stories with different characters from the town, and it's just absolutely wonderful.
All right, and it's been getting a lot of buzz.
Yes.
Wonderful. Yeah. And just lives up to your expectations.
Oh, she's
extraordinary.
She's extraordinary.
All right. Wonderful. Well, Kathy, and that was, Anything Is Possible by Elizabeth Strout. Kathy, what's your first pick?
Oh, my first pick is the 13th book in the series by Louise Penny. It's a mystery series. The 13th book is titled Glass Houses. These are set in a small town in Canada called Three Pines, and you really have to read the whole series, which is why it's a great summer pick. You've got the entire summer to read the whole series. They are delightful.
They're very smooth reading, too.
Oh, they are fun. The author does an amazing job of introducing you to some characters that you want to hang out with.
And where do they take place? What's the backstory?
They take place usually in a small town in Canada called Three Pines that is not really on any map and usually doesn't get any cell phone reception or internet connections. And the main character is an inspector in the Sûreté, Inspector Gamache, and his team. And you get to know the inspector and all of the people in the town so well that they become your best friends.
Oh, fun. Glass Houses by Louise Penny, the 13th in the Inspector Gamache series. And that's coming out in August, right?
August 29th.
August 29th. So you have all summer to read the first 12.
Please do. They're great.
All right, get started now. I know mysteries are one of your great loves, too, Paul. Now, again, these are some of the best books of Paul Ingram's life. So what do you want to tell us about?
The best books of Paul Ingram's life that he could find around the house to bring and catch up on. And I'm a huge fan of William Faulkner, and I've read most of his work. And one I hadn't read is Intruder in the Dust, which is his most accessible book. It's about what it is. It's about To Kill a Mockingbird. You cannot read To Kill a Mockingbird again after having read Intruder in the Dust. This was written in 48. This was written a long time before, and it's about a black man who may or may not have killed a white guy, and one of the characters is a lawyer, and the other character is a 12-year-old boy, and he gets much more deeply into the lives of the black characters than Harper Lee does in To Kill a Mockingbird. But it is... If you want to get started with Faulkner and understand why he is loved so much, Intruder in the Dust is a really good starting place. And if you like To Kill a Mockingbird, you can love the story. There's a great film of this as well, which I checked out of the library. And
nice.
It was also made in like 1950.
All right, but it doesn't have Gregory Peck in it.
No, it has actors you never heard of.
All right.
Yeah.
Intruder in the Dust by William Faulkner, one of Paul's best of picks. And that brings us back to you, Jan.
Well, I pulled one out that might follow up with a Faulkner book as well as anything I brought today. And that's called, it's a new novel called August Town by Kai Miller. And Kai Miller is a Jamaican novelist and poet who's actually going to be at Prairie Lights tomorrow night. And he lives in London now, and so it's a real treat to be able to have him here. And this book is probably actually more related to Garcia Marquez than Faulkner, but it is set in it's set in a town in Jamaica in it's in 1982, but it's looking back at a day in 1920, and the town itself was founded by former slaves in 1838. And in 1920, a charismatic preacher had convinced almost everybody in the town that they could ascend to heaven, and he was going to lead them from a tree, but he falls out of the tree and is taken to an insane asylum. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't leave a lot of followers still believing that they could ascend. And in 1982, a six-year-old boy is bullied by a teacher in his school who cuts off his dreads. And an older woman in the town who's still sort of a follower of this cult idea of ascension convinces him of another world. And it's just beautifully written.
August Town. That sounds amazing. Kai Miller, you said?
Kai Miller.
Kai Miller. All right. And he'll be at Prairie Lights tomorrow. Kathy, that brings us back to you.
First of all, I'd like to say that I'm one of those really eclectic readers, and I read a little bit of everything. My next pick is a science fiction novella, part of the Tor.com line of novellas. So it's really short. It's 150 pages long, and it's called All Systems Red by Martha Wells. The main character is a security bot. It's not human. It's not really a machine. It's got a brain, but it's owned by an insurance company, and it has hacked its governor module, and it's gone rogue. Kind of. What it really wants to do is watch the 35,000 hours of entertainment it's downloaded, not really interact with the research team it's been assigned to.
That's great.
But when something attacks the team, Murderbot, which is its name for itself, has to make some really difficult choices and decide whether it wants to help or not. It's funny, it's snarky, and it's got a really, really interesting story behind it. You know, this poor bot is more human than many humans, and it's a great, fun, quick read.
All right, All Systems Red by Martha Wells. And I know so many science fiction readers. Do you feel like this is a genre that just doesn't get as much respect as it should, Kathy?
Yes, often. Fans are huge fans, but they tend to be a little quiet, so you don't tend to hear as much about it. And there's some fabulous science fiction out there. You just have to ask a few people to find it.
All right. And that brings us back to you, Paul.
Okay. The next book I want to talk about is our next book group book, which will be the 21st of June. And it's Walker Percy's The Moviegoer, which won the National Book Award in 1962. So you've got to figure it's about the 50s. And it's about a character named Binks Bolling, B-I-N-X. And I don't know what sort of person would allow himself to be called Binks. And he, the title, The Moviegoer, has a great deal to do with him and the world he inhabits. It's a New Orleans book, and which is as different from a Mississippi book as you could ever be. You can't imagine these people talking in Mississippi accents or anything like that. And Binks is well-to-do, and he has an enormous amount of history in the family. So what he mainly does is he walks around town, and there's his Uncle Julius. And Uncle Julius is a hysterically funny, goofy character. You know, everybody he runs into is an eccentric of some sort. But he was in the Korean War, which is the reason most of the men in this book suffer, because they've been to Korea, which was horrible. Mm-hmm. And he, early on in the book, he decides that he needs to seek. And he never really gives you a precise idea of what he's seeking. But every once in a while, he'd say, you know, this, it is beginning to catch on. You know, I'm beginning to seek.
Beginning to find his way.
Yeah. Can I read a little bit?
Not right now, because we've got a break coming up. But
All
right, we'll be back in just a few minutes. That's The Moviegoer by Walker Percy. Again, one of Paul's classic picks today. We are talking about books that should be on your summer reading list this year with Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer book show today. Books that should be on your summer reading list. We're talking about some of the best new books that are out or coming out shortly. We're also taking a look back this hour at some classic books that you may have never heard of, but Paul thinks you should read them. Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here, and Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola. Did you have a final word about The Moviegoer, Paul, you wanted to share? I thought it sounded like something that Murderbot would really enjoy from Kathy's last pick.
Well, he's an intellectual, and he's known to suddenly break into Kierkegaard or some of these European philosophers, and his it's just all these people here are so interesting.
Just fascinating characters from
and
New Orleans.
If you were to search for a plot, it would be tough.
All right, but it's worth looking
for. It's worth reading.
All right, that's The Moviegoer, again, by Walker Percy. And Jan, that brings us back to you.
Well, I have George Saunders' book, Lincoln and the Bardo, which came out a couple of months ago, and it is, it's historical in one way, but it's sort of fantasy in another. I don't know if you know about it, but it's taking place in February of 1862, right after Lincoln's son, Willie, has died. And he's suffering terribly. And Willie is in this crypt in Oak Hill Cemetery. He's later, after Lincoln's assassination, he was later interred in Springfield, Illinois. But in this period where the book is set, Lincoln can't let him go, and he keeps coming back to visit the crypt. And the bardo is a Tibetan Buddhist concept of sort of limbo, you know, where where your soul is trying to free itself and get to the afterlife, but it hasn't yet. And so there are all these other characters, which are actually historical characters, who are also there. They're also denying that they've died. And you get to hear things about their lives. But they're very concerned about that this little Willie Lincoln soul is not being allowed to free itself because of his father's grief. And it's a little bit like Spoon River Anthology, but it's more irreverent, and it's very historical. They talk about the Civil War, these other characters that are sort of plotting to figure out how to get Lincoln to let this boy go. And
wow.
Yeah, it's an amazing book.
It sounds remarkable.
Yeah.
It's one of a kind.
All right, Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders. And that brings us back to you, Kathy.
Thanks. My next book is The Alice Network by Kate Quinn. It's just come out in paperback, and it's a historical set right after World War II. The main character is a 19-year-old pregnant socialite who is on her way to Switzerland with her mother to take care of the little problem. And she goes AWOL in London to find someone to help her look for her missing cousin who disappeared in France during the war. And she finds a female alcoholic ex-spy from World War I, and they set off to France to track down her cousin. It's fun. It's got a lot of historical detail about both World War I and World War II and the spies during the wars. And it's a great, entertaining read for the summer.
I see a movie behind it. I could see that would be a really good film.
Yeah, it sounds like both of those books would be like perfect reads on a summer road trip. My family just got back from D.C. and I thought, either one of those would have been a great read for in the car on the way or on the way back. All right, that one's The Alice Network by Kate Quinn. And Paul, that brings us back to you, another classic.
Okay. This was one, the book is Final Payments by Mary Gordon. Many of you may remember this book. It was in the 70s. One of a spate of feminist novels that spoke to the issues that were shouting out in the 70s, like Erica Jong's books and Marilyn French's Women's Room. But this is, to my way of thinking, the really good literature of it. It's about a woman. Very serious Catholic woman who grows up under the tutelage of a father who's a McCarthyite, and they live in New York, and nobody ever leaves their neighborhood, which is why they've never had a race problem. And they just give it to another member of their family. And she takes care of her father when her mother dies, takes care of him. And he's really tough to take care of. I mean, it's a lot of energy. And when he finally dies, she's 30, and she's never had a date. She's barely been out of the house, and she sort of has to reconstruct a woman's life in 1976. And fortunately, she has a couple of pals that she went to high school with, and they help her. But the whole thing is not easy. She becomes extremely aware of men's feeling of entitlement toward her body. People are always slapping her on the bottom and things like that. And she writes brilliantly. No, I'm not. We don't have enough time to read any of it. But it's just, some of it is funny. Like I gave it to a friend of mine who was raised in a similar environment, and she thought the whole thing was just hysterical, which I take as a form of denial. Because whereas the book is not exactly anti-Catholic, it pushes the boundaries of what is okay and not okay.
Right. It sounds like just a wonderful way to throw into sharp relief the incredible cultural shift that was taking place during that time.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great idea for a book. The book group just went nuts for it.
Definitely one to rediscover. Final Payments by Mary Gordon. And Jan, you're up next.
Well, I just want to say quickly that I'm reading a book right now that I don't have with me that's not coming out until September by Thomas Keneally, who wrote Schindler's List. And it's taking place in a Catholic church where there's abuse going on. And it's an amazing book.
Is it fiction?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. He's sort of born to write that. Well, I mean,
right.
But anyway,
he's born to write a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful writer.
Yeah, but right now I'm going to talk about a lighter book than any of the others I've talked about so far, and it's called it's light in some ways. It's called "Do Not Become Alarmed" by Maile Malloy, and it is the characters are two cousins, Nora and Liv, who grew up together to some extent, and they're now married and they have children that are like between 6 and 11. And each of them has two children. And Liv books a cruise for the two families over a Christmas holiday. And they're going down the coast of Mexico and into Central America. And there's all this sort of, Maile Malloy is really, she's a short story writer often, and she's a really great writer in terms of relationship sort of intrigue. And so, you know, the sort of intense friendship of these cousins and the problems, which aren't too severe in their marriages, and the rivalry between the children and all those kinds of scenes are excellent. But the plot in this book is that one day the husbands decide to play golf and the wives take the kids swimming, and one of the mothers is not completely seduced, but gets into a flirtation with someone and stops paying attention to the children, and they get abducted. And so it's not
that sounds light
by a drug dealer, but they're not, nothing too awful happens.
Good.
But the novel surrounds then the, you know, scenes where the children are trying to figure out how to get out, and scenes where the parents are trying to, you know, save the children
and themselves.
Yes, right.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Do not become alarmed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really a lighthearted one.
Right.
Well,
by comparison, right? Yeah. All right. Next up, Kathy. What do you have next?
Well, something that I've been seeing a lot lately are really big name authors who are starting to write comics. Margaret Atwood did it just last week. Rainbow Rowell from Omaha announced that she's writing one. And there's a really fun one coming up by Leigh Bardugo, who's one of my favorite teen authors. She's writing a Wonder Woman comic called Warbringer, which is an origin comic about the first time Wonder Woman goes off the island before she meets anybody else, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Leigh Bardugo hitting it just the right time.
Oh,
as
yeah.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Perfect with the movie. Yeah. Leigh Bardugo's written a series of great teen books set in the Grisha universe, and also has a couple of crime caper, science fiction, fantasy teen books. So this one should be a lot of fun.
All right, and again, that one's coming out in August.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right, we will be waiting for that. And Wonder Woman, Warbringer by Leigh Bardugo. And Paul, back to you with another classic book.
Okay, I have a classic Canadian novel called Mr. Sandman by Barbara Gowdy, who is from Toronto. And she writes all kind of stuff. She writes things that are a little bit fantasy. She writes things that are very fantasy. I was thinking about this book the other day, and I was thinking, this is probably the book that I have read the most times of any single book that I've ever read.
Really?
I know, I read it most years. It's like the Salinger stories. Because there is a deep comfort in it. And It is about this goofy family in small town Canada who are, they all have some sort of sexual kink, and none of them will admit it to anybody else. And they all have affairs with this same huge red-haired guy.
Oh my.
who is like a Popeye character from the Popeye you hear just these crazy people sitting around the kitchen and talking. The first scene, a baby is born with white hair and white eyes, and everybody assumes there's something wrong with her. She's autistic. She can play the piano, and she can't talk, and she can't be around sunlight. So she lives in the back of a closet, and she ends up saving the family in the most. It has the most adorable, sweet ending that, I read it a lot and I cry a lot. And
but in a happy way.
Yeah, cry. She is the best unknown Canadian author, you know. No Atwood or Monroe.
Right.
But she is amazing. And
that sounds like the perfect quirky...
Yeah.
But sweet summer read. All right. Mr. Sandman by Barbara Gowdy. And I think one more novel. Do you have one more?
I do. I have the least lighthearted novel. I think,
yeah,
I think that's not lighthearted at all. I think I might have talked about it last year, actually, but it's just come out in paperback.
Okay.
And I know that it's a difficult novel and it's not for everyone. In fact, I had someone who usually loves all my recommendations come back to me and say, "Why did you recommend this to me?" But
right.
I've had other people
with
that
disclaimer.
I've had other people that say that it's, you know, one of the most important novels that's been written about race in America ever. And I think that might be true because it's called The Sport of Kings, and it's by C.E. Morgan, who is a woman actually and lives in Kentucky, and it takes place over many generations. The initial character is a patriarch from Virginia that comes to Kentucky in the 1700s and starts growing tobacco, and you see these kind of awful, they're actually quite personal, so they're psychologically awful rather than physically awful for the most part, relations between slaves and slaveholders throughout a number of generations of this same family, until this woman who is something of also of a main character decides that she's going to get out of tobacco and into horses. And it's another kind of relationship. It's contemporary, but there's still a lot of racial issues and black jockeys, and it's beautifully written, and it probably is definitely influenced by Faulkner.
All right. But
anyway.
Not a light read, but
right.
an important read.
Yes.
If you want to read it all summer.
No, you can read it. I read it in a week,
okay.
But reading nothing else.
All right, you're an extraordinary reader as well, Dan. We'll take that under consideration. Sport of Kings by C.E. Morgan. We have just a minute and a half before our break. Kathy, what's your a final novel pick or a final fiction pick for us?
Oh, my final pick is The Painted Queen by Elizabeth Peters and Joan Hess. It's the last in a really long-running series by Elizabeth Peters, who sadly died last year and has been finished by Joan Hess. Based on the life of Amelia Peabody Emerson, who just before the turn of the century goes to Egypt to become an Egyptologist, and she is kind of the forerunner of Indiana Jones, and it's the last book in this series, so it's a little nostalgic for me, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Joan Hess does to tie up the whole thing.
All right. That is The Painted Queen by Elizabeth Peters, and then finished by Joan Hess, and it's coming out in July. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is our summer book show. We're going to turn to a nonfiction here in just a couple of minutes, and of course, this list will be up on our website later today if you've missed a few of these picks. You'll find it at iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola, and Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer book show. We're doing things a little bit differently today. We are talking about the best new books that should be on your summer reading list. We're also taking a look back at some great books that you may not have heard of that may have sort of fallen off the radar, but Paul Ingram thinks they should be on your reading list. He's rereading them these days. Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore is here. Paul Ingram, also of Prairie Lights, but now retired. And Kathy Magruder is also here from Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola. And so before we turn to nonfiction, which is going to happen here in just a moment, Paul, let's get another pick from you.
Okay. I have a book that when I ask people if they've read this book at the store, everybody says, no. And it's Truman Capote's first book, Other Voices, Other Rooms. And it was written in the early 50s and by a 22-year-old who had not really been educated. He'd been educated by his lover, who was a professor, by Newton Arvin. And the story is about a boy named Joel Knox, who is sort of sent away for mysterious reasons by his mother to live with the weird branch of his family. And it is, when people talk about Southern Gothic literature, this is what they talk about. Joel Knox's father, who he would like to get to know, lives upstairs, and he's disabled. He's an invalid. And when the family is eating and the father wants something, he releases a tennis ball that bounces down the stairs.
It's like his bell.
Yeah, like his bell. And they say, Joel, go see what your father wants. You know, and it is a book. It is very short. And you think, oh, this guy is so smart. If I could have written like that in my 20s, it's like what people are saying about Dennis Johnson now. To have those talents, if you pick it up and read the first page, you will be mesmerized.
All right. I'm going to have to put this on my list of things to revisit because I tried it when I was 16, Paul, and it didn't go well.
No. So. No. It won't go well to a 16-year-old.
All right. I'll circle back around on that one. Other Voices, Other Rooms by Truman Capote. And Jan, let's talk about nonfiction.
Well, I've got so many choices here.
Yeah, and we're not going to have time for all of them. So, but we'll put the list that you gave us up on our website. But
well, I think I'm going to start out with talking about, since this, I don't know how many of the listeners have been or have any interest in going to the Emily Dickinson movie that's been getting all this attention, A Quiet Passion, that's at Film Scene, which I saw this weekend. And I think it's important if you do see that movie and haven't actually read a biography of Emily Dickinson or spent much time with her poetry to make sure that you do that after seeing the movie so that
and maybe a little before you see the movie too.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. But anyway, there are many biographies of her. And so actually I think I'm going to suggest a book that's a book of essays about ways that people have thought about her. I can name a number of biographies. There's one that's quite easy to read and not bad called My Wars Are Laid Away in Books by Alfred Habegger. It's not with me, but
okay.
And there's a Pulitzer Prize winning one from 1970, if you really want to get into it, called The Life of Emily Dickinson by Robert Sewell, S-E-W-A-L-L. But this collection of essays really goes over a lot of the biographical detail, and it's called A Loaded Gun, which is based on, the title comes from her famous poem, My Life, It Stood a Loaded Gun. A lot of people think the Civil War influenced that poem, which is an interesting thing to think. And her life is endlessly fascinating because we can't really know anything about it except from her letters and from documents that people left that actually did know her.
Mm-hmm.
But we would have no idea what her gestures were like. We have no way of knowing what she looked like other than that one daguerreotype. We have there's no recording of her voice. And so I think it's just really, she's just unbelievable. She's sort of like the world expressed itself through her. I mean, in a way that, you know, I don't think there's any way that we'll ever pin down who she was or how she could have written these amazing poems.
But her words still speak to us.
Oh, so.
And
yes.
Did you like the film?
I was prepared to really hate it, and I only moderately disliked it.
My wife hated it.
That is quite a recommendation, though, from Jan. All right, so a number of different biographies or looks at Emily Dickinson. A Loaded Gun by Jerome Charon edited
yes.
by Jerome Charon
yes. mm-hmm.
is your most recent recommendation. All right, so that brings us back to you, Kathy.
My book is The Perfect Horse by Elizabeth Letts. It just came out in paperback not long ago, and it's set during World War II. And in addition to stockpiling art, during World War II, Hitler was also stockpiling priceless equine breeding stock, Arabian slipizzans, the best in the world, and hiding them away in a small farm in Austria. Well, toward the end of the war, the starving Russian army was closing in on this farm, and the people who were keeping these horses were terrified that the Russian army was going to slaughter these priceless animals for food, which would be like shredding the Mona Lisa to start fires. Mm. And the people at the farm made a daring midnight ride over the hills to an American encampment not too far away that fortunately was being headed by a cavalry major who was intrigued and started a movement to get these horses out of the way of the Russian army. And this is the story of moving the horses out of the way and where they went and what happened. And it's nail-biting. It really mm-hmm. is.
Are these the Lippensaler horses?
Mm-hmm. Lippensons okay. and Arabian stallions.
Yeah.
All right, The Perfect Horse by Elizabeth Letts, now out in paperback. And Paul,
okay.
I don't know. It doesn't have to be nonfiction since we're digging into classics.
No, this is nonfiction. It begins... Take my camel, dear, said my Aunt Dot, as she climbed down from this animal on her return from high mass. This is The Towers of Trebizond by Rose Macaulay, who is one of the wittiest travel writers ever to live. And Aunt Dot is supposedly based on Dorothy Sayers. She knew all these. And there's a strong but tongue-in-cheek religious tone to the whole thing. They're going to Trebizond, which is a resort in Turkey. And they are accompanied by the Anglican priest Father Chantry Pig, who is just doesn't get it at all, and he seems to not know that the Muslims have taken over Turkey, and he keeps looking for some Byzantines, and of course can't find any. The the book is it just makes you laugh all the way through, and each of these people have adventures that are not particularly plausible, but extremely amusing, and it makes fun of the English church, and the way England treated the notion of tourism, and you can just buzz through it. This is another one that really won the hearts of the book club.
Nice.
They were nervous about it, but makes you wish this woman were still alive so she could be on TV.
All right, The Towers of Trebizond by Rose McCauley, and that brings us back to you, Jan.
Well, I have.
And we'll have to, this is the lightning round, the beginning of the lightning round. We have like 6 minutes left.
Okay, so I'll go really fast.
All right.
This is the brand new book by David Sedaris called Theft by Finding, which is, I think it's a British term that if you find something, you've actually stolen, and that's how he sees his diaries, that he sees these little incidents in life, and they aren't really his, and he writes them down, and so that's
right.
Kind of like stealing. And so these are his diaries from 1977 till 2002, and apparently he edited this down. It was like 8 times this much.
Wow.
And then there's going to be a second volume. But he says that he doesn't write about, quote, unquote, his feelings. But he makes clear his feelings for other people, and they aren't all funny, but they become more funny as the book goes on.
And there are some entries written in Iowa, right?
There are some entries written in Iowa.
Particularly flattering entries written in Iowa.
Well, I don't think anything's flattering, usually.
That's not his stick.
That's not his stick, right. And he suggests not reading it from cover to cover, but picking it up and going through. Although he did once say something very flattering about Prairie Lights.
Nice.
He had a tip cup at a reading at Prairie Lights, and he later said he got more tips at Prairie Lights in Iowa City than at any other reading that he brought out his tip cup.
Nice.
That's funny.
All right, that's Theft by Finding. David Sedaris' diaries, 1977 through 2002. And Kathy, back to you.
I'm going to talk about The Radium Girls, The Dark Story of America's Shining Women by Kate Moore. It's the story of the radium craze in the Americas. About 1917, radium was the hot new thing. They were telling everyone how healthful it was. And one of the most coveted jobs that women could have was painting radium on the dials of clock faces. And it was very fine work. And to do this, they would dip their paintbrush in radium, put it in their mouth to get a really fine point, and then paint the numbers on clock faces. Unfortunately, as we know now, radium wasn't really that healthful, and these poor girls started to die really horrible deaths, which weren't acknowledged for quite a while because nobody wanted to say that radium wasn't a great new healthful thing.
Oh, just heartbreaking.
It's a story that'll make the hair stand up on the back of your neck.
Radium Girls, The Dark Story of America's Shining Women by Kate Moore. And Paul, back to you.
Okay. Well, I've done my one nonfiction.
All right. Okay.
This next book was written in probably the 50s, and it's been republished by, it was written in 1960, and it was republished by the New York Review of Books. And it's about an English civil servant who is gay, and his lover is a very different kind of person. His lover is a thief and is in prison. And a lot of the book is about the relationship with what's his name? That doesn't matter. Is about his relationship with his boyfriend's family, who are these great. We think the world of you, they're always saying in this incredibly non-sincere way. The book is called We Think the World of You. And finally, the civil servant finds solace by taking over the care of their dog, who they've essentially been abusing because they know nothing about dogs. And this guy has this great relationship with the dog. And J.R. Ackerley wrote about maybe four or five novels. He was an editor of a literary magazine, an English literary magazine. And when he decided to write something, he wrote perfect little books that stay with you.
Right. And it's a slim volume, too.
It is a slim tome.
Nice. All right, We Think the World of You by J.R. Ackerley. We probably have time for one more quick one from Jan and one more quick one from Kathy. So, Jan, go.
Okay, well, I'm going to just go quickly with Yi Yun Lee, who is a Chinese-American writer who actually is a graduate of the Writers' Workshop, and she has a nonfiction book. All of her previous books, which have garnered a lot of praise, are fiction. But this one is called Dear Friend from My Life, I Write to You in Your Life. And it's really about her deep relationship to reading and her choice to write only in English, even though she didn't learn English until she was in her 20s. Mm. She came to Iowa City to be in a medical program here and read a William Trevor story and decided that she wanted to write. And it's about her deeply she's sustained by what she's read, and so she very, and her personal relationship with William Trevor, but her relationship in just through reading to Catherine Mansfield and Elizabeth Bowen and Alice Munro, and it's just a really beautiful book.
Wonderful. All right, that one is Dear Friend from My Life, I Write to You in Yours, Yi Yun Lee. And Kathy, very quickly, your final pick for today.
My last is A Warrior of the People by Joe Sterita, which is the story of Susan LaFleche Picotte, who was the first Indian doctor and also one of the first female doctors during the late 19th century. She was the daughter of the chief of the Lakota Sioux, who went to school, learned to be a doctor, and came back and spent her entire life taking care of her people on the reservation.
And I can second that one. I couldn't put that one down. I had Joe Sterita on the show a couple of months ago. But Kathy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for asking me.
Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola, and Jan Weissmiller, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Paul Ingram, thank you.
Well, it's been great to
be here.
Thanks
for taking a little time out from retirement to come and tell us what to read.
You might see me again.
All right, wonderful. We will put this list up on our website later today, iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.